This is the Back Porch Education Podcast. Today on the show, we discuss why we write, why we assign writing, and some of our own writing processes. Afternoon, Steve, Jason, we're here together with our buddy Robert Frost. Steve, go ahead.
No, this time he's already got a seat and got his cup of coffee, yeah. And I'm glad to have Robert with us. Okay. He's starting to feel like an old friend. So
yeah, good. I'm glad you're coming around. He's warming up to you too. This is great. So okay, this one, I do want to get to this poem, but I want to kind of front end it a little bit because, frankly, because the poem's a little bit longer, it's like 50 lines. And I want to give us some idea of what's going on in the poem as it relates to what we're talking about before I read it, just so that we have some sort of context as we're listening to it. I think it's just a little bit too philosophical, a little bit too heavy to drop without saying anything at all. So
good job selling it.
Thank you.
You've got me scared. Hopefully great. The listeners are getting better prepared than me.
Yeah, no, it's you guys hang in there. It'll be a really good time. But I want to talk about writing processes today. I want to talk about why we write, what motivates us to write, and what we find ourselves doing when we're writing. Because I think in academia, at least in my studies, there's this assumption that everybody sort of has the same writing processes. There's a lot of assumptions, you know, that we all do it the same way, that we're all after the same thing, that we're all motivated by the same sort of thing, that we're all writing for the same reasons, that we all have the same audience in mind. You know, like there's just so many of those questions. And
that's why generalities and universalities tend to always be wrong.
Right, right, yeah.
Just about everything right. You just said, my heart leaped at. We're like, no. Right.
Okay. Exactly. So there's a lot to it. With that in mind, let's hear this poem from Frost. What you're going to hear is a poem. Well, it's a letter, right? That a tramp wrote to somebody who owns some land. And this tramp, as he calls himself, saw something marvelous in the middle of the night as he lay in the middle of the field. Okay. And then something happened to him, sort of within, he says. From there, he then talks about what that might be. And he muses on who might own this land and then sort of gives a charge. So that's a lot, but that's the overview. And now watch how Frost makes this happen, because I think it's really special and it's worth our consideration. An unstamped letter in our rural letterbox. Last night, your watchdog barked all night. So once you rose and lit the light, it wasn't someone at your locks. No, in your rural letterbox, I leave this note without a stamp. To tell you it was just a tramp who used your pasture for a camp. There, pointed like the pip of spades, the young spruce made a suite of glades so regular that in the dark the place was like a city park. There I elected to demur beneath a low-slung juniper that, like a blanket to my chin, kept some dew out and some heat in, yet left me freely face to face all night with universal space. It may have been at 2 o'clock that under me a point of rock developed in the grass and fern. And as I awoke, afraid to turn or so much as uncross my feet, lest having wasted precious heat, I never should again be warmed, the largest fire drop ever formed from two stars having coalesced, went streaking molten down the west. And then your tramp astrologer, from seeing this undoubted stir in heaven's firm set firmament, himself had the equivalent only within. Inside the brain, two memories that long had lain now quivered toward each other, lipped together, and together slipped. And for a moment, all was plain that men have thought about in vain. Please, my involuntary host, forgive me if I seem to boast. 'Tis possible you may have seen, albeit through a rusty screen, the same sign heaven showed your guest. Each knows his own discernment best. You have had your advantages. Things must have happened to you, yes, and have occurred to you, no doubt, if not indeed from sleeping out, then from the work you went about in farming well, or pretty well. And it is partly to compel myself in forma pauperis to say as much. I write you this. Okay, so just that little bit there, I forgot to mention beforehand, in forma pauperis, it's like it's a legislative term, I think, that means, well, Latin, right, of course, but it means like you don't have the money in the form of a pauper. So you don't have the money to pay for counsel. So that's the kind of where that, where he ends there, right? He identifies himself as without the requisite funds to pay for counsel in the form of a pauper. So Steve, maybe I'll ask you instead of just, hey, what'd you think, and throw you something pretty hard. What if I ask you something a bit easier, like, what writing did you see? Why was our tramp motivated to write?
Why was the tramp motivated to write? Okay, so forget Frost for the moment, but
the tramp, Frost.
The tramp has had a moment, right? The tramp has had two things. He wants to, I think, get down what happened so he can think about it by getting it down, and two, he wants to share it.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice.
I don't think a tramp's going to knock on the door. I mean, often they would knock on the door and ask for some food, but that's not what he wants. He wants, it's almost like he wants to just leave behind the moment, making the assumption that something like it has happened in the reader. And so, hey, I just want to share with you something cool that happened last night. It was in the middle of the night. But you might've seen it too. There was this astrological event, I guess, the appearance of two stars colliding and falling out of the sky.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think it is. It's
and I haven't seen anything like it before, and wanted to get this down and wanted to involve somebody else in it.
Yeah. Cool. I think that's right. I think it's neat, sort of, like you said, tramps in this time. It was common for them to sort of ask for food or whatever. And I do think there is a certain poetic flair in having a tramp only leave something behind, right? Like he's sort of felt like he already got enough from this farmer in sleeping under his juniper tree for the night. It's a pretty neat thing.
A tramp by his very nature is indigent, and so there's nobody, I don't want to put this too strongly, but there's nobody that cares.
Yeah.
And this was too moving an event to just have and be gone.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to mark it, so to speak, to put it down, to leave something. People do this in various ways. They etch their initials in some important place, in a tree where they kiss their girl or something like that. Of course, today we don't take the time to write out a poem like this. Right. We just snap a quick one on our cell phone and move on. But the selfie or even just a quick shot, obviously he probably wouldn't have been fast enough.
Yeah.
To capture the actual event, the shot would have been of a starlit sky. But it's a memento. It's a capturing of a moment. And I love that the poetic impulse, I think often why poetry is written, is less about a logical proposition and more of a moment captured.
Mm-hmm.
And here's Frost, this great poet, that turns a tramp into a poet to do exactly what Frost tries to do on a regular basis, right. which is bring us into a moment we wouldn't have otherwise had.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully at the end, thank the poet for it.
And the
starving poet, right? This is really all I got is my words. I can't offer you much else, but here's this thing that happened. And I think it's worth you sharing with.
Yeah. Good deal. Well, so thanks for humoring me. I mean, this is a good one. And I think this is a very sort of pure example, not exactly an example. This is maybe an idealized or a very pure motive of writing, right? Where this is, well, maybe I'm only speaking for myself, but this is what we all want to happen, right? Where we see something, the largest fire drop ever formed.
Right.
And then your tramp astrologer himself had the equivalent only within.
Right.
And so that moment happens out there. So we witness some beautiful, miraculous thing. And then that happens inside of us somehow. I mean, yeah, I'm going to start reading the whole thing again if I go back to it, because it's so fantastic.
The connection.
For a moment, all was plain that men had thought about in vain, like that the world made sense. And so he grabs a pen and paper, right? It's, I think it's a really noble impulse.
Right. And it is an impulse, an emotional upwelling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. It comes from within. It's a personal thing that wishes to be expressed. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we're going to talk about writing processes, I would say the motivation, which is what you introduced through this, is a great place to start. Why would we start mm-hmm. writing? What kind of impulses would make one want to write? I read a lot of works about writing and about rhetoric and about expression, and the internet is full of how to make money writing.
Yeah.
Right. You can get on some email lists and you'll get stuff every day and twice on Saturday.
Yeah.
10 ways to improve your blog writing I saw one today, 10 common mistakes romance writers make. And well, that doesn't apply to me, but there's a lot of people thinking about the craft of writing from a fiduciary or a profit side.
Yeah.
And I think
the Grammarly app
is
blowing me up on YouTube, man. I can't watch a video without Grammarly saying, hey, you know what? You really ought to pay us, you know?
Right. And I think that notion, sooner or later, and maybe it already exists and I just haven't discovered it, but the sort, you remember the Mad Lib things that your kids drive you crazy with in the car?
Yeah.
I need two adjectives, daddy, and a verb. And a
right.
I think that's coming at a novel level where there will be an algorithm where the writer doesn't have to write sentences, paragraphs, chapters. The writer fills in specific parts, the goop, and then this AI grabs the thing and very unartfully cranks out this whole book. sure. from the idea, the basic plot line and the few specifics that provide. Yeah. And of course I don't want to read that because I believe good writing starts within, right? There is mm-hmm. something to be expressed. I don't think the word unique or original need be as ominous as it sounds.
Yeah.
Like no one has ever thought that it's original enough in me, like what happened with this tram.
Yeah.
I've never seen something like this. Nothing has affected me quite like this before, and I wanna keep it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanna memorialize it. I wanna put it out into print. And I know for me when I'm writing, certainly there's the pedantic kind of writing where I've been assigned to write something.
Absolutely.
It needs to be done to earn the grade or to earn the money or to, you know.
Absolutely. Satisfy. The majority that I'm doing these days. Right.
Right. Right. Exactly. Academia is full of this. Mm-hmm. And I get worried that we lose sight of the fact that that's not really writing in its purest sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's performance. I don't want to call it a game,
right?
But there's a little bit of a paint by number notion. You figure out what the prof wants, mm-hmm. how long it's got to be, what the parameters of the assignment are, and you try and hit the bullseye.
Yep.
As opposed to, I've got this thing in me that I want to express to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And it might take the form of a story. It might take the form of a poem. It might take the form of a persuasive paper. It might take the form of a limerick. It might, you know,
yeah.
the form in part wells out of the purpose or the intent that I have for what I want to express.
Yeah. Okay. So that's good. I want to hop in there because I think you've identified some important things. Definitely, there are a lot of motivations for writing. We can sort of do it for money. We can do it because we're instructed to, right? Or you know, the carrot is being dangled like, ooh, do you want an A? Come on, write this paper. we can be motivated perhaps by some experience that affects us, right? And maybe we can dig into that a little later, sort of. There might be some more to uncover there in terms of making some more divisions. But one of the things that you said about, you know, writing for a grade and trying to hit the bullseye is sort of the parameters that are put on me or on a writer by the instructor, right? It must be this long, you know, word count, topic, that sort of thing. Form, certainly.
Yeah.
But you didn't come right out with it. But I think what you were driving at is sure. Actually, that paper, those performances, in some ways, are quite a bit easier to write because you just have to put your nose to the grindstone and do it. However, it ends up removing your ability to make a lot of the most interesting decisions in writing.
Right. Exactly. Right.
When your teacher says write a poem, guess what you're writing? A poem. It doesn't matter if an essay would be more appropriate for the topic or your voice in responding to it. Right. It doesn't matter anything else. You're going to write that, and that's fine. Again, my goal is not to disparage teachers of writers. Because, you know,
writers come from being taught. Right? So it's an art, right?
Yeah.
It's an ability to do something, and arts are learned through apprenticeship. So
mm-hmm.
the better writer is instructing the writerling in how to write. And so to do that, there must be forms. There must be practice pieces. There must be scales. I my mind equates my experiences in trying to learn how to play an instrument with learning to write. Okay, I think music. I think music is more about the four liberal arts of the quadrivium of number, and that mm-hmm. language, whereas the three liberal arts of word is what writing is about. But they are alike in that you learn to use those arts first within the discipline of how they work, what can and cannot be done with a musical note or with letters, words, sentences, paragraphs. And only after mastering the basic scales, so to speak, or the basic parts of writing, am I then able to free myself from those assignments given to me by my stern taskmaster teacher and write for pleasure. Right. So when I'm trying to learn the guitar, which I never did well, it's the point is to try and get all the chords down and to try and get the musical language learned by playing challenging pieces. We start real easy and we get progressively harder because it pulls in more skills that I need. At some point, the notion is that if I've really got a musician's heart, I pick up the guitar without any sheet music or tablatures or whatnot, and I start making what you said earlier, making the really fun decisions of music.
Right.
Let's try something I haven't heard before that I've created, as opposed to, I got this paper due next Wednesday and it's got to be X, Y, and Z because that's what the teacher has assigned me. And of course, we use writing beyond the art of writing. We use writing for clarity of thought or for assessment of thought a lot in academia. I have them write a paper, not because I'm trying to make them great writers. I'm trying to see that they have thought clearly about some subject. And it's really much more about the thinking process than the art of writing, although the better writers they are, the more clearly they can communicate what they've thought about. And I guess that needs to be stated, is that there's more than one righteous reason to write, right?
Right.
It might be simply to entertain. It might be to sell somebody something. It might, you know, persuade someone of something. It might be to communicate quote unquote facts. But Frost is, I think, at the highest point, right? He's writing to move.
And I think
that's what you mentioned earlier, different kinds of writing that might need to be at the very bare minimum. To me, there is the writing meant to affect the mind, the head, the logic, right? And then the writing more aimed at the, I want to use the word sensual, but the feelings, the emotion, the imagination, the wonderment of the person. Ooh, I'd never thought of that before, as opposed to, okay, he's trying to prove this to me and here's his reasons. Or, you know, I wrote a research paper in high school on lacrosse because nobody in my school knew what lacrosse was. They won't play lacrosse in Kansas. You know, it's just informative. What is that thing? At the time, there was a Pepsi commercial with guys running around with these sticks throwing balls at each other. And we're like, what is that? And so I said, well, I have to write a research paper. I want to know what that game is. I'll go find it out. And
perfect. I wrote a research paper in high school on Albert Schweitzer.
There you go. Right? See,
because it was like, hey, I got to write something and. This guy was a missionary. He could play the organ. But he decided to go to med school before he became a missionary. What? This is crazy.
Right.
Like, I'll write my paper about him. You know, and it was cool. That's a good point. I think it is easy to disparage or to sort of inappropriately tier writing. I mean. Isn't it, I think Noah Webster I think it was Noah Webster who, you know, he was writing a dictionary cause he like had to pay the rent and, Handel's Messiah was the same way, wasn't it? He writes, this amazing, okay. So that's music, a little different, but, he creates this marvelous thing because he needs the cash. Like we don't want to, well, at least I don't think I want to set up a super hard division in terms of, oh, well, you know, if you got paid for it, then you didn't mean it, or something like
right,
that.
Right. Right. Now, I think it's a continuum, right? And okay. There can be the, on the one side, sort of the robot cranking out the hits or cranking out, I would put advertising writers down there or something. Sitcom writers just cranking out the words because we got to have another show. And they're not really emotionally invested in it at all. It is purely an act of profit. Mm-hmm. In the musical world, that often gets called a sellout, just trying to write the next pop hit. And there's nothing to it. That, to me, that's way out on one end of the continuum. There's probably very few people that operate at least very long, right? Because I think writing is a hard enough art that if you don't have any heart in it, you're going to give up on it. You're going to get burnt out. Way over on the other side, though, of the other side of the continuum is this pure, we might call it the starving artist side, where they never finish anything. They've gotten so immersed in the writing process that they don't know, they wouldn't stand to have it edited. They would never want it to be published. For them, right? And I think most writing and musicians and painters, etc., artists fall somewhere more towards the middle of that continuum, all the while probably having to from time to time deal with their own prejudices about where somebody else is on the continuum separate from them. You know what I'm saying? That guy's more of a sellout than I am. Or, ooh, I wish I could write with the purity he writes with. Well, if you did, you'd starve. You know, so I absolutely agree.
Right, like Emily Dickinson.
Right, some of the best work can come from a very banal motivation of my editor has told me I need this done by next week.
Yeah. Being under the gun, right? The sort of creative pressure,
Definitely. I think there's a give and a take there. I certainly watch this all the time in academia where, you know, 9 months from now, this 100-page thesis is due. And when you map it all out, wow, you know, this is an easy elephant to eat. The problem is no bites are taken until, you know, 15 February, days before it's least. Due. And then suddenly... You know, there's a hilarious TED talk. I can't remember the guy's name or what it exactly. It has procrastination in the title. If you want to try and find it on TED,
okay.
And if I'm good enough, I'll put the link on the webpage for this episode. But it's hilarious because he's talking exactly about this, about how with his master's thesis, he kept putting it off, and he said procrastination is actually beneficial to him because he has this panic monkey inside him. That starts screaming when deadlines get close, and it brings out his best work. Wow. And I think some people are that way. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Last minute's not good for me. I like the slow and steady pace of the tortoise over the hare. But But I think that there are different personalities that bring out, you know, that respond to artistic situations in different ways. So. Mm-hmm.
Let's go there. Let's sort of talk about the more mundane aspects of writing, because I think that's something that isn't often talked about, and I'm just curious. So you are not when I taught first year comp last semester, my students started calling the panic monkey that you're talking about. They called that the pressure method. Right, where you wait, and then, oh man, the weight of the world's on my shoulders, and I have all this pressure. I got to get it done. Boom, knock it out. The all-nighter sort of idea. You're not the pressure method. You don't like the panic monkey. What else? What about in terms of like workspace? Clean, dirty? Does it matter to you? Like, tell me what has got to happen for you to feel like, okay, I'm in the zone where I can actually get some writing done. What time of day is it? Is it the weekend? Is it a messy house? Is it an empty house?
It needs to be quiet.
Okay, it's got to be quiet.
Which has challenged me, four children, 10 years apart in total. There was a period there where writing was impossible. I'm down to one child in the house, and he's a teenager, so he's very silent and moody. Yeah. So it provides me a great deal of writing material if I want
to. You guys write poetry together now.
Yeah. something like that. No, I have found that like my wife and I's work schedules sometimes are opposite. You know, she works evenings, I work days or something like that. Thankfully not in total. Right. But if I know she's working in an evening, that's a prime opportunity. For me, of course, as a teacher, summertime offers itself. As far as workspace, it just varies. I need to be comfortable and I need to be undistracted. It does need to be quiet. I used to try and write with music. It's not good. It doesn't matter what kind of use. I went down the new age, you know, sort of white noise, very minimalist.
A
gong dinging somewhere in the background. It's just as soon as my mind hears things, it's off, you know, and I need linearity. I need to start somewhere and go somewhere. Even in my invention, my brainstorming, you know, which I guess is worth it, if nothing else, for writing the three canons, the three steps that the Greeks identified for us, and I think we've just held on to ever since, this notion of coming up with something to say, invention, and then once you've got a lot of stuff out there, for me it's out on a pad, right? That's a weird little thing for me. I got to have a gel pen. It's got to be something that writes very easily and very smoothly. And any little distraction, even like the pen isn't working or this pencil tip isn't sharp enough or whatnot, it gets
right.
I hear you. So if I've got the right tools, the pad of paper and a good pen, it just gets filled up. I'm not going to develop a chart things. It's still the pages start getting filled up with all kinds of ideas. I don't think there's a bad idea in the inventive process. And so I'm just trying to get, and that's often, if I can get a few pages filled with ideas about the idea, it's off and running. If I have an idea and it just sits there and stares at me for a little while, it's often into a file somewhere and more often than not forgotten about, never returned to, or only returned to so long after that I've even forgotten I'd had the idea. And then it seems new to me. And then maybe that time the pages fill up. but once you got all this stuff.
So you start on the page though.
I do. I used to try. Let me reverse engineer it. I saw with myself, and in particular, when I started teaching writing, that students in particular who put themselves in a time crunch, I got a paper due tomorrow, jump over the really heart and soul of writing, go right for the middle, and I want to be clear that it's the middle act of writing, which is drafting, and then because by that time it's due in an hour, they just lick it and stamp it and get it in the professor's box and get
right. Spell check. Yeah. Okay. It's fine.
I think it's in the right format. It looks good. I got page numbers. Okay. Boom. And it's really, so I call it the middle because they've skipped over invention and just pouring out, whether it's through just the thoughts in their head or material that they've gathered, right? Because research can be a part of this. But over what I hope is an incubative period of a week or just depends, right? But if you've got X number of days to, if you've got a deadline, the earlier you get started getting stuff onto paper, then they want to just get it right onto the draft. I don't want to have to go through various steps. And when I talk about three canons of invention, arrangement, and then elocution or writing, these first two, I could do that when I'm writing. Well, okay, but it's going to stink.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. I mean, I find myself, I've got a couple papers due every week. And so I hear you. My invention phase, if that even happens, is very minimal. You know, for right now, I mean, I sit down at the computer and I just start la-di-da. Like, I just start typing up what I think is going to be the idea that I'm focusing on. And I end up sort of writing myself into an argument. And then I go, okay, well, this will work. And I fill it out from there.
Do you do an outline?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
So, to compare our process, and you're very common, right? A lot of what you're talking about is not a decision you've made.
Exactly. So that's just it.
The teacher has assigned a ridiculously narrow amount of time for you to think about it.
Right.
What they want is a paper. They don't seem that concerned about it being of any depth or thoughtfulness,
right,
or they would have given you longer time to do it. Now, if the reason for the process is because you're not taking advantage of the 2 months they gave you to write it.
Yeah, that's on me.
That's a different problem.
Right. But that's not the situation.
But I try to teach kids that are headed to college. Look, if you've got, if it's a semester paper, if it's a summative type of assessment, this is a big deal. Mm-hmm. You normally will know about that maybe as early as the first day of the semester. Mm-hmm. So the more time you put in up front, giving yourself information to work with, the more you pour into invention, the easier arrangement, which is to me forming an outline. Right. If I've got pages of just discombobulated thoughts, all I'm basically doing, often what I'm doing with the invention when I'm through with it and to sort of edit it a little bit and get a little less crazy with it, is typing it in.
Mm-hmm.
And then by it being electronic, I'm capable, just a little specific hint here, I haven't found anything quite as productive as Google Docs for outlining.
Yeah.
It's very much more intuitive than Word is.
Yeah, Word is so I'm fire. Often
yeah, well, it wants to format things. Get away from me.
Right.
But just the simple process of hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
What is the thought? What are the main points to this thought?
Right.
And then how do all this other thoughts eliminate themselves to these major points that I want to make.
Right.
Most students say, well, that's so much work, but you're going to do it as you write the paper or before you write the paper.
Right.
And I'm a dull dude when it comes to the less I have to be creative as I'm writing, the better writing I'm going to produce.
Right. So that's just it. So, you'll either do it or it will show that you haven't done it. Right.
Right.
And so like the stuff that I'm turning in, it shows. Like I read this and I read the paper, after I'm done typing it and I go, you know, okay,
right,
it'll pass. It's fine. But it's not writing that I, I just say, oh man, if I had time, this would be so much better. I could really, there are some things here that I've left really undeveloped. But that's okay because, you know, writing is.
When you don't have, right. And you don't have the rest of your life.
Right.
I mean, yes, obviously you can come back to it throughout your life and revise it and refine it and make it better, but you probably won't.
No, I've got other projects that I'd rather
benefit.
Work on.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and if you came back to it 30 years later, you'd go, what idiot wrote this?
Yeah.
because all those other projects have made the sum total of a greater Jason than wrote that those many years ago.
Yeah.
Right. I'm far enough away from my college experience that if I really want to torture myself and I start dragging out some of that college material, I knew nothing.
Yeah.
But there's a flip side to that. You can get, if you're teaching others to write and you yourself have refined your process quite a bit, you can get to where you forget where they're at.
Yes.
And you start using the time it would take you instead of the time it would probably take them. And then you start getting, you know, because I'm doing this challenge myself this year. My students, my seniors, write a 10 to 15 page thesis. It's not a big thesis as college goes, but for a high school student, significant paper.
Yeah.
Which they're trying to prove something, and it's, you know, MLA format. It's got a, they got to do an interview with a expert of some sort.
Cool.
Other than their mother. And somewhere, I think it was late last year, or it might have been the start of this year, some wiseacre, a senior, said to me, how come you don't have to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Could you even write a thesis?
I said, well, I certainly hope so.
It's been a while, and that's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
I thought about it and I said, some of them have asked me from time to time to exemplify or to show me what you mean.
Give us a model.
Well, here's an opportunity.
Yeah.
And so I set up a quick little website for them at Mr. E's exemplification site.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that I've required of them, I've required of myself.
Yeah.
The funnest aspect was coming up with the thesis, which this year is why every senior should write a senior thesis.
Oh, nice. Meta.
Yes. Yes.
That's good.
And they're very engaged in my efforts.
Okay.
They are so good at pointing out to me any fallacious reasoning.
Okay.
any weakness in my argument.
That's brilliant, man. That's fun.
They are really eating this thing up, but forcing myself, not only has it provided them with a model, which I think is helpful to them.
Super helpful.
It's made me think, what am I asking them to do? What are the skills that I know they have?
Mm-hmm.
What have I taught them in the past that would make this possible?
Mm-hmm.
And wow, you know, they asked me to, the biggest part, the draft of my proofs was just due this past week. And one student said, how long did it take you to write that? Once they saw the 8 pages or so that I had put together with just my proofs,
mm-hmm.
the bulk of my arguments, I haven't put the refutation of the other side in there. I haven't put an introduction conclusion. And I said, well, I started it when I was watching a study hall. I think I put a half an hour in there. And then a couple of days later, I came back after school and about an hour. Said, you wrote all that in an hour and a half. And I said, guys, I write all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just faster than you are.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm any better than you are, but I'm faster.
Right.
That don't measure yourself according to the time. Measure yourself according to the clarity and the content and the, you know, how I'm doing it, not so much how fast I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get there, trust me. By the time you get done with college, you'll be much faster than you are at the present.
That's right.
But that's true of any art, right?
Yep.
My son and I were having a conversation about weightlifting recently, in which I was like, it's not just how much you can lift, it's the form. Are you lifting correctly, or are you, you know, using your entire body to do that curl?
Yeah.
Or just your biceps, right? And I think writing's the same way. That I don't think there's a form to writing. I do think the canons are legit. I think mm-hmm. that in some way or another, you have to come up with what you're going to say and decide what order it's going to be said, and then say it.
Sure.
And if that's a some sort of a brainstorming chart like I make, and then an outline, and then a draft, or if it's something you sit there at your keyboard and kind of work into
mm-hmm.
all at once, I'm not as concerned about that as that you have, first of all, legitimately put – this is the problem with my students. They don't know how to just sit and think.
It's hard. It's hard to think about translating your thoughts. Like, it's hard to have thoughts that are worthy of writing down, right? Like, to have only those thoughts, it's almost impossible. So you have to have lots of thoughts, some of which are bad.
Lots of thoughts. and I think one of the healthiest things, when my students follow this, and I've got one student that's been thinking about their senior thesis now for since they were sophomores. Mm-hmm. And they made the comment, you know, I'm glad to finally get it down. I've been thinking about this for a long time. And I'm like, well, there's nothing that's been stopping you from having a little note mm-hmm. pad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And that if you can put some days between thoughts, it's amazing when you come back and you see what you've already written down, your brain's been working on it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Subconsciously. Mm-hmm. And so when you come back, there's new stuff.
Yeah.
And if you can do that 4 or 5 times or 8 or 10 times, again, it's entirely dependent upon you and what's causing you to write.
Yeah.
You know, I've got stuff that I've been messing with. This is way over on the other end of the spectrum, right? This is that purist,
yeah,
starving artist. I've got stuff that I've been messing around with for years and they never see the light of day, but nobody else knows it's there.
Yeah. Right.
So, but when I come back to it, that evening when I say, okay, I'm going to pull up this old thing and I open it up and I kind of give the survey at, you know, there's parts that make no sense to me and I start working with that. And then there's parts that, well, why didn't I ever think of this book? And, you know, there's a freshness to oldness, so to speak, or to removal.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. That's what I said. It's, they go right for the middle of writing. Mm-hmm. The front end, the first two canons, they often jump over. And then all that I think what makes difference between a paper and a great paper is the revision work.
Yeah, for sure.
And once again, most of them are, and this will date me, but back in the 80s, we were ripping it out of our typewriter and stapling it and running it to the professor's box because the clock was about to ding.
Yeah.
And the notion of going back and retyping it.
Yeah.
You know, so I did develop the habit when I knew it had to be a good paper, the first one was handwritten.
Okay.
The first draft was handwritten.
Okay.
And then the editing was done as I typed it in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that was my shorthand.
Yeah.
Now with computers, you know, I draft right on the keyboard. Mm-hmm. But the ability, if you give yourself the time to even come back the next day, and it's, I'm old school enough, I print a copy off and I grab my faithful triggering red pen and mark up my own work.
Sure.
Right. And that's the other big difference is when you introduce another editor, some other mind.
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Now writing takes off in a whole different realm as tough as it is to stomach. Mm-hmm. Well, because the professional writing I do at the present time, you know, I'm in my 50s and my editor is in her 20s.
Okay.
And she's a nasty little person. she's a perfectly wonderful lady.
Sure.
But
it's your writing.
Her opinion of my writing is so much meaner than my baby. Right, you know, she's slapping my baby around. But it's made those projects so much better to get some other mind working with what you think is so clear. And they're going, I don't have any idea what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, how can you not, you know,
I agree. I think a really, practical sort of, tip that goes alongside, what you've been saying is a lot of my students, if I say, hey, look, this has to be 5 to 7 pages. Well, at 4¾ pages, they're like, I'm done with this paper, right? And I go, hey, whatever. If everything you've written is solid gold for 4¾ pages, rock on. Turn it in.
Right.
But if that's not the case, just think about how, like, just think about the absolute luxury that it is if you have 6½ pages and you go, you know what? I can cut a page of the junk and still be within the page requirement. It's a much better place to be, because then you're able to, you don't have to stand behind every single little word that you've typed. Nothing's sacred, right? You can just say, oh, I'm going to get rid of this, do away with this, rewrite this. And, yep. and you yep. end up in a much sort of stronger position overall. And so, yeah, that's for sure.
I used to do just the minimum.
Okay.
And then experience taught me that a maximum was a nice thing too.
Yeah.
Cause I got to read it.
That's right.
And so I had the young man with the 10 to 15 turn in 27 pages. Cause it was his, I mean, he'd been wanting to write this thing for a while, and it was all about rock and roll. And it was just really, and every lyric that he put in there was just seminal to the, and yet he had that luxury. There's a different burden to editing down from trying to invent more to say.
Totally.
And I think that the refinement and editing down process produces a much clearer and better paper than, well, I'm going to throw another quote in here and I'm going to fluff here and come up with a wacky example here.
Right. Is there another bigger quote I can get?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Maybe something from like Plato or something. Or, you know, Heidegger has got to be good for a long
yeah,
quote.
He never gets to the point. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's get it.
Use Wittgenstein, because the parenthetical reference is going to take up half a line writing out the man's name.
Right.
So.
There's lots
and
of
don't
tricks.
Don't quote from the same guy.
No,
quote from the same guy, because Ibid is way too short.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's funny.
Oh, well.
Good deal. Well, you know, I think that's a wrap probably for us today. There's a lot left uncovered, a lot we still have to invent maybe. But yeah, this was I'm glad that you shared some of your the quirks of writing, because we've all got them, right? And just as a sort of final word here, I would say for all of you all writers, which is all of us, don't think that any part of your writing process is set in stone, right? That any of the practices that you've developed are for sure the best no matter what. You know, Steve has found out that he likes to chart things, and that's a good practice for him. But he might find that something else works better. Don't be afraid to try to change up your writing process and see its effect. You might discover tweaking some small part of the way you do things ends up in, you know, a big change overall. So keep writing.